Welcome back to Hooked on Horror. Today, we continue Hellsworth. If you missed the previous episode, we recommend that you go back and start there. Otherwise, enjoy. A few minutes later, Knox's hood is pulled off. He's still outside. Someone shines a flashlight in his face, blinding him. Then he's pinned to the ground.
Get his hands down. Hurry!
Knox squints through the glare of the flashlight and finally makes out the face of Palmer, who is towering over him. Several other boys are behind him.
Get off me, asshole!
Palmer clamps a huge hand over Knox's mouth and quickly wraps electrical tape around his wrists. Another boy does the same to his ankles.
You still haven't been initiated.
Then, as Knox struggles against it, the boys start to strip him down, pulling down his jacket, his shirt, his pants, while Palmer pulls out a small video camera and powers it on.
Here's how it works. You sing the alma mater with us, and every time you mess up, we take some hair and...
A buzzing sound starts up.
Now, smile for the camera, bitch.
The others laugh, continuing to pin down Knox. Palmer lifts battery-operated shears up to the camera and signals the others to join him in the school song.
Warm our hearts with understanding. Mold our backgrounds as we lead. Ellsworth prep and new directions.
He looks at Knox.
What's next? Sing it.
F off.
Wrong answer. The correct lyric is, to a world ahead in need.
With that, he bends closer and takes the first swipe, cutting away a long strip of Knox's hair. Knox growls under the electrical tape. The others laugh.
Aw, don't worry, newbie. I promise you someday you're gonna look back on all this and laugh.
He raises the shears again, prepping for a longer cut.
Maybe we should skip the foreplay and just cut to the cutting.
Knox struggles until suddenly a gunshot pierces through the air. A bullet rips into the dirt beside them, missing them by inches.
What the h-?
Another bullet whistles past them, blasting through the bark of a nearby tree. In an instant, there's total chaos.
Run! Run!
The other boys scatter, running into the night, panicked. Knox gets to his feet and hears another gunshot echo in the distance. He frees his ankles and starts to run for his life before one last gunshot rams into his shoulder and drops him in his tracks. The next afternoon, the entire student body sits silently in the dining hall. The faculty stands solemnly at the front of the room. Headmaster Cass addresses the students.
We'll be conducting our own review into this unfortunate incident, but until that time, we will do all we can to assist the police in their investigation.
On the periphery, a pair of police officers and a detective nod to Mr. Cass in acknowledgement and quietly scan the room.
I have been headmaster at this school for 20 years, and you, each and every one of you, are my life's work. You are my hope for the future. And the idea that one of you would bring a gun into these halls is abhorrent.
Among the students, Riley listens to the headmaster with a growing impatience. She glares at Palmer, who is not far away.
As always, counselors are available. Until then, we'll do all that we can to keep you safe.
Bullshit!
Students gasp and fall silent. Mr. Cass squints into the crowd.
I'm sorry? Was there a comment?
Riley finally stands up from her seat. The students around her react in stunned silence.
Yes, sir, the comment was mine. And the comment I made was, bullshit.
There's another collective gasp.
Young lady, please, sit down. If you want to discuss this further, we should do it in closed quarters.
So you can sweep it under the rug? A girl died here, and you dismissed it, sir. You said it was stress.
She looks around the hall.
So how are we all feeling now? Is anybody as stressed as I am?
A murmur of support rises among the students.
Someone has a rifle, sir.
We're aware of that.
Which means we're being hunted.
Riley, sit down.
Somebody is hunting students, sir, and until it ends, we will not be quiet, and we will not sit down.
As she says it, more students shout their support. Some stand with her. They pound on tables and stomp their feet. Various faculty wave their arms and demand silence, but the students refuse. An hour later, Knox hears a girl's voice.
Knox?
Just leave me alone. Go away.
He groans and opens his eyes. A bouquet of flowers sits by the window. A girl is standing by his bedside. Her wavy brown hair looks familiar. It's Violet, the dining hall girl, smiling at him.
Where are the police?
I don't know. I just got here. But I brought you some dinner.
Violet nods toward a dinner plate on the bedside table.
Normally I'd say you should eat it while it's hot, but it wouldn't taste any better. So, how do you feel?
Like my brain is in a vice.
Ouch. The doctor said you'd be okay, for whatever it's worth.
Knox's attention drifts toward the flowers on the window. Violet pulls a card from the bouquet and reads the inscription aloud.
Be safe. Love, Dad. Aw.
Knox just smirks and shakes his head. He notices an IV in his arm and starts pawing at the tubes.
Should you be doing that?
My father would never send me flowers. He'd consider it cliché.
Maybe he's saying he's sorry.
And he'd never do that either.
Knox struggles to climb out of bed.
Something's not right here. I've got to find my chart. I want to know what drugs I'm on. There's a file. I saw Dr. Mason looking at it.
But you're supposed to rest.
Someone is messing with my head.
Knox looks up at Violet with an expression of sheer desperation.
You're the only one I trust.
That night, Knox stealthily enters Dr. Mason's empty office, turns on a desk light, and starts searching the various files piled up inside. Violet follows him apprehensively.
I'm so getting fired for this.
You said you hated your job.
Yeah, but jobs don't exactly grow on trees these days. Maybe for people like you, they still do.
You mean rich people?
Just saying. I never knew what a trust fund was till I started working here. You all have your futures planned out and prepaid.
Like that's a good thing? And for your information, I spent a whole summer painting houses on the Cape, so I know what a job feels like.
Wow, the Cape. Sounds rough.
Dad thought it would be good for me. Building character, etc. Sometimes I think he barely knew me. Maybe he never wanted to.
Violet looks saddened by this. Knox picks up a stack of files and sees one with his name on it. He opens it, and he and Violet look at the recent photo of Knox with his father.
That's him? He looks nice enough. Handsome. I see where you get it.
Next, Knox finds a series of medical forms, filled with notes on various medications and dosages. It's a surprisingly long list.
Sodium pentothal, 5 cycles. Lithium, 5 cycles. Morphine, 3 cycles.
Digoxin? What is digoxin?
As Violet keeps reading, Knox starts feeling dizzy. He rubs his temple, then takes a seat in Dr. Mason's chair to try and steady himself.
They give digoxin to thoroughbreds during training. It's illegal.
For horses, but not students? How long have you been on this stuff?
You tell me.
Just then, they hear voices echoing from the hallway outside. Knox quickly shoves the papers back in the file and clicks off the desk lamp. They crouch behind the desk together, hiding. For a moment, all they can hear is their own breathing. They lean in even closer to each other, close enough to kiss. When Violet abruptly moves across the room to the door and peeks outside, she listens. Then, waves back to Nox.
I think we're clear.
As she says this, she sees Nox on the floor, in spasms.
Nox!
Nox can see Violet's blurry image hovering over him, but he can't hear her. His eyes flutter shut. In the dead of night, Nox suddenly opens his eyes to find himself harnessed to a steel lab table, surrounded by six technicians in white lab coats, all of them staring down at Nox. Nox panics, gasps for breath, and tries to speak, but finds a plastic gas mask strapped over his face, muffling his words.
Subject is awake, gentlemen.
Nox's eyes go wide as smoke suddenly fills his gas mask. He chokes as he breathes it in.
Let's try this again, son.
A halogen lamp lowers into place above Nox. Strobe lights burst, blinding him over and over.
Awake, arise, or be forever fallen.
The next morning, Nox bursts awake, gasping for breath, and finds himself back in his infirmary bed. He sees the morning sun peeking under the drawn window shades. He glances around, confused, and sees Violet curled up in a nearby chair, asleep. The cafeteria dinner plate is on his bedside table, untouched.
Violet?
Violet starts to stir, at first slowly, then suddenly.
Hey, whoa, what time is it?
She looks at a wall clock.
I've got to clock in at work in, like, 20 minutes.
What happened to me?
Last night, you passed out, and I got to drag you back in here.
She rubs her eyes.
I must have fallen asleep.
Where's my file?
Don't worry. I returned it. Nobody will ever know we were there.
Just then, the bell tower chimes. Violet groans and opens the window shades and runs her fingers through her hair, collecting herself.
Now the walk of shame, straight to work. God, I feel classy.
Was anyone else here last night? Like, guys in lab coats?
Wow, those drugs must really be working, huh? Enjoy the ride.
She leans in and kisses Nox's cheek. She turns to leave, but then stops at the door.
I was thinking you should write to your dad. Start talking to him again. I mean, maybe it would help.
Nox simply shrugs at her suggestion. Violet leaves and shuts the door behind her. 1 hour later, Palmer and Riley are sitting in the headmaster's office. Palmer barely fits in the chair. Riley shifts in her seat and assesses her nails. They are only inches apart, but refuse to look at each other, as they endure a scolding from Mr. Cass. Dr. Mason sits nearby, observing.
Chaos. That must be your goal. Inciting violence, rebellion, and fear, and at a time of such suffering. Frankly, I see little reason not to have you expelled.
I can think of a reason, sir.
Son, your family's money isn't going to get you out of this one.
Well, then how about the simple fact that I've done nothing wrong?
Palmer, you assaulted him.
Excuse me, that's hearsay.
He's got a chunk of hair missing from his scalp. That's not hearsay.
And your point is? Yes, we were on the quad. Yes, we were breaking curfew, and I regret that. But what I most regret is being shot at like a deer in the woods. That's not grounds for expulsion. That's grounds for a lawsuit. Sir.
Riley groans and rolls her eyes at this. Mr. Cass studies her.
And you, Riley, challenging our authority in front of the student body. For what? To punish us for the death of a troubled young girl?
Riley reaches into her jacket and throws a small plastic object onto his desk. Mr. Cass picks it up and looks confused for a moment.
What's this?
Dr. Mason leans forward to look at the object, too.
It's a pregnancy test, and it's been used.
Gross.
An unreadable look passes across Mr. Cass's face.
Riley, this really is not the forum to be discussing any...
It's not mine, sir.
Mr. Cass looks at Dr. Mason for a clue. And Dr. Mason finally understands.
Sophia.
Riley nods. Mr. Cass glares at Riley.
And how do we know this was hers?
I found it in a garbage can near her room, and I put two and two together.
You think she was pregnant?
I don't know. Let's ask Mr. Cass. Is that a tiny little plus sign or a tiny little minus sign, sir?
Mr. Cass gives it a glance, then carefully puts it down. He can't hide how upset he is.
But I apologize. You were asking why I could possibly be so upset about a troubled young girl.
She raises an eyebrow.
Would you like to ask me that question again?
30 minutes later, Riley and Palmer walk away from the headmaster's office, heading to class. Palmer is literally applauding Riley.
Oh my God, that was f***ing brilliant. I was threatening a lawsuit and you blew that shit out of the water. I'm impressed.
Then give me the tape. When you went after Knox, you were filming it. I want that tape.
Why?
Because you'll pass it around campus and everyone will see it, and Knox doesn't deserve that.
Wow. Do you have any idea how horny you're making me right now?
Please don't get weird.
I'm serious. I forgot how sexy you are when you're committed. When you actually give a shit and...
He gives her a look.
When you're not totally stoned.
Riley groans and flips him off. Palmer just shrugs.
Pardon me for caring about you. Maybe I don't want to see you jumping off a bell tower someday.
Palmer glances around, reaches into his backpack, and pulls out the video camera. He hands it to her. As he leaves, he asks her.
The pregnancy test. Was that real?
Riley simply shrugs, poker-faced. Palmer smiles and walks away.
F***ing brilliant.
2 days later, Knox passes through the school halls after classes, heading toward his room. Classmates nod and slap his good shoulder, Hitch among them.
Look at you, a bullet in the shoulder. Some guys will do anything to get out of class.
Knox turns the corner and slips into his open doorway and finds Riley sitting on the bed.
I have the video.
A few minutes later, Knox and Riley are reviewing the events of the night on the video. The head shaving. The gunshots.
Has anyone seen this?
I don't think so. Palmer knows it would get him kicked out of school.
But he gave it to you.
You'd be surprised what a boy will give up when he wants to be loved. Anyway, you should have it.
Play it one more time.
Riley complies.
Stop. Make it go back for a sec.
Riley rewinds the footage a bit, to the point where Palmer is running from the distant gunshots.
Stop. There. Right there.
The frozen footage reveals a speck of light coming from a distant building. Riley goes back and forth, frame by frame, and as she does, a tiny light flashes on and off in time to the gunshots.
Those are the gunshots.
The police said the shots must have come from ground level. Does that look like ground level to you?
Not even close.
Knox's jaw tightens. The confusion he's been feeling for so long gives way to anger.
It's time we get inside that bell tower.
The next morning, Emilio, the janitor, is in McFadden's dorm room, emptying the trash. All the while, McFadden leans on his desk, watching Emilio like a hawk.
So, what happens when you steal our stuff? Do you sell it online or keep it? I mean, they can't pay you very much. It just makes sense you'd want to take nice things.
Emilio walks outside and is returning to his cart, when McFadden notices what looks like a hearing aid in his ear.
Well, I know you can hear me, because you've got that thing in your ear. Hey, get back here!
McFadden follows Emilio into the hallway, where Emilio tries to push his cart away.
Hey, you don't like it when people watch you work? So what does that say about you, Pedro?
They pass another janitor, Angel, who quietly nods to Emilio. Oddly, McFadden notices a similar hearing aid in Angel's ear.
His name is not Pedro, it's Emilio. Call him by his name.
Up ahead, Emilio ducks into an open dorm room and slams the door behind him. McFadden angrily follows him. He opens the door and enters the room.
Whoa, that's my friend's room. You can't shut the door like that. That's how stuff gets pinched.
McFadden stops short when he sees three more janitors in the room, all in the middle of some kind of inspection. Each is wearing sanitary gloves while sorting through drawers and rummaging through the trash. They're working as carefully as crime scene detectives.
Sir, you have to leave.
Angel appears from behind McFadden. He pushes him out of the room and back into the hallway.
What the is this?
The door to the room slams again, shutting him out. 20 minutes later, McFadden is in the headmaster's office, along with Emilio and Angel.
I'm telling you what I saw. They were going through personal property, piece by piece. So, while we're in class, these people are sneaking into our rooms, taking what they want, sir. And if we accuse them of it, we're bigots.
Son, calm down. I'm sure there's an explanation for this.
I'm explaining it now, sir. These men are doing something criminal, and it's right under our noses.
Emilio shakes his head.
We didn't steal anything from him.
You stole my f***ing pen!
McFadden pounds the desk, livid. The others fall silent, watching as McFadden covers his face and starts to cry.
You don't understand. That pen is from my family. My family who left me here 2 years ago. And they're never coming back.
His voice is cracking.
This school is all I have, sir. And they're coming into my room and they're stealing from me.
With that, he finally loses it. He can't stop the tears. Mr. Cass considers him, looking concerned, and nods to Emilio and Angel.
Gentlemen, please.
The two janitors stand and quietly leave the room. Mr. Cass shuts the office door and sits down across from McFadden.
Mr. McFadden, let me ask you. Do you have any idea why your parents left you here to study with us?
McFadden doesn't respond.
Because you're weak. We've spent years trying to make you a man, and apparently we're failing.
Sir, I'm sorry.
We've just lost a student. We nearly lost another one, and I have to find out which one of you is hiding a firearm in their room before we lose anyone else. This is a critical time for the school.
Mr. Cass gets up from his desk and looms over McFadden.
And you come to me about a pen? Never take your time here for granted. It can end very quickly.
Several days later, Violet hauls a heavy garbage bag outside, dumping it into a trash bin. She pulls off her hairnet and looks around.
Knox?
A moment later, Knox appears from behind the docks.
Have you got it?
Violet pulls a serving ladle from her apron. She hands it over to Knox.
So, you're taking up cooking now? This I'd like to see.
Call it an after-school project.
I was hoping that I was your after-school project.
She smiles shyly at Knox.
I'll be wrapped up in a couple of hours. I could meet you somewhere.
Violet reaches out and touches Knox's arm, but pulls back when she sees Riley lingering not so far away.
Or not.
We'll talk later, okay?
Violet nods. She looks sad as she watches Knox retreat back to Riley. 5 minutes later, Knox and Riley are outside the service door of the bell tower. Knox pulls the ladle from the sleeve of his school jacket. It has since been bent and sharpened, like a prison shiv.
Whoa, nice blade, homeboy. Spent much time in prison lately?
Only this place.
Riley checks her watch.
Wait for it.
Seconds later, the bells in the tower start to chime. The sounds are almost deafening. On cue, Knox chops away at the lock with the ladle shiv before the lock finally gives way. Knox opens the door. As he and Riley enter the tower, Riley pulls Palmer's video camera out of her backpack and starts filming as they climb a narrow wooden staircase.
You're filming this?
Absolutely. If we find something, I want it on film. We need proof.
As they climb, the wooden staircase creaks dangerously beneath their feet, as if it could collapse at any moment.
Hold on.
Knox stops, bracing himself against the handrail. He's sweating and looks dizzy.
What is it?
Do you feel that shaking?
No.
She reaches out to steady him.
You don't look good.
I'm dizzy. That's all.
Knox takes a deep breath and keeps climbing. There's nothing but darkness all around them. Then they see the outline of a door. As they get closer, the video camera light reveals a sign on the door. Restricted access only. Riley stops, suddenly nervous. She turns back to Knox.
Ready to pull back the curtain?
Knox nods and tries the door handle. It's locked. He gears up and with one powerful kick, smashes the door open. Before them is the tower belfry, with two massive cast iron bells hanging in the center. The room is filled with moonlight.
It looks empty enough.
You sound disappointed.
Along the wall, a series of windows open onto a panoramic view of the campus. From here, they can see the school chapel, the dormitories, the stables, everything.
Look at that. From up here, it seems like a perfectly fine school.
Knox moves toward an old leather chair partially hidden in the corner. It's ratty and torn, and on the seat, there's a neatly folded newspaper. On the armrest beside it, an ashtray is completely filled with cigarette butts.
Was Sophia a chain smoker?
Not that I recall.
Riley picks up the newspaper and inspects it. She looks at Knox.
This is today's paper.
Knox takes a closer look at the ashtray. He notices one lone cigarette still smoldering. They're not alone up here. Just then, there's a creaking in the darkness behind them.
Look out!
Before Knox can turn, he's struck in the back of the head. He staggers back, tries to find his balance, and takes another head blow, crushed by the butt of a rifle. Knox hits the dusty floor. His shoulder is in pain. Blood is pouring down from his ear. He can hear Riley screaming, but he can't see her. His vision is going fuzzy. When he opens his eyes, he hears another scream. He spins and sees a man hoisting Riley by the waist and throwing her out the window.
Riley!
Knox sprints to the window and tackles the man. He starts throwing punches in the dark at a face he can't quite see. Then the man disappears into the darkness.
Help me, please!
Knox climbs to his feet, dives for the window, and finds Riley hanging onto the ledge, her fingers slipping. She's dangling 10 stories above the ground.
Please! Knox, please!
Knox reaches for her, straining to grab her wrist. Riley's hand slips away. Now only Knox is keeping her from dropping to her death. Far below, a group of students looks up at the tower in horror. Knox leans over as far as he can and grabs Riley's arm with his other hand. His shoulder is throbbing, and he struggles to hold on. Riley grabs his forearm, her legs swinging wildly beneath her.
Reach, Riley! Come on! Reach!
Her foot finally finds purchase, a stone gargoyle head giving her the slightest toehold. It's just enough for her to climb upward and spill back into the belfry. Riley and Knox collapse on the floor, gasping for breath, but still alive.
It's okay. We're okay.
Riley falls into him, sobbing. Knox wraps her in his arms. Moonlight pours in through the open window, a bright, perfect square on the wooden floor. In that square of light, Riley and Knox catch a glimpse of two things. The video camera Riley was carrying, smashed to pieces. and not far from it, a plastic name badge left on the floor. It must have been lost in the struggle. Knox picks up the badge and examines it. It reads, Project MK Prep, Special Staff, Full Access. Beneath the words is an ID photo of the taxi driver who first took Knox to Ellsworth Academy. The end. Thanks as always for listening to Hooked on Horror. Don't forget to subscribe and follow us on social media at Hooked. And download the Hooked app to browse our full library of spooky stories.